Hello, and welcome to the Consistent Profits Podcast, brought to you by Inside Out Trading and Brian McAvoy, where the focus is on consistency, because when you have the consistent part down, profits become easy. Hello, everybody. This is Brian McAvoy with the new episode of the Consistent Profits Podcast. I'm excited today to be interviewing Roger Corey. He's the creator of Market Forecasting Academy. Roger, thanks for being on the podcast today.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to be here.
Yeah, excellent. So for those of you who are not familiar with Roger, he's an expert in the field of market forecasting with over two decades of experience. In 2010, he developed an innovative probability-based form of price forecasting through real-time demand analysis called market vulnerability analysis, or MVA. He did this to overcome an inherent flaw he had discovered that was unavoidably baked in every trading and investment strategy developed for the world's financial markets. In 2019, he launched the Market Forecasting Academy to accomplish his vision for educating and mentoring active market participants on acquiring the skill of accurate and objective financial market forecasting. Roger, again, thanks for being here and being game for the interview.
Yeah, this is great. I'm looking forward to our time.
Cool. Well, one thing I always have to ask everybody, just because traders in general are not your normal sort, and it's definitely not a normal occupation. How do you wind up getting into trading?
So I was back in 1996 when it first, the whole trading revolution took over, you know, it was just taking off and everyone was getting excited. That the appeal of being able to work on your laptop geographically anywhere you want to be, you know, as long as you got a good solid internet connection, that was very appealing to me. But that kind of led into a 14-year journey, you know, discovering that no matter what you buy, no matter what you invest in for education, training tools, it would work, you know, and no matter how disciplined I was, you know, and following the rules and sticking to that, having good trade psychology, that none of that seemed to matter. And it was driving me nuts because it's like, why is this thing that I got working, figured out, all of a sudden not working or working inconsistently or, you know, and so this cycle kept repeating. And then I kind of realized, okay, that's the nature of the beast. The market's always evolving and changing. So what was working with the conditions that evolved at one point, you know, that was helpful for a strategy. But then when those conditions changed again, then they were no longer favorable to that strategy, and I had to go figure out version 2.0 or some next new thing. You know, so I'm constantly chasing this next new thing, and I never know when it's going to just stop, right? And so that was very exhausting. And but I had a lot of things happen along the way. But towards the end, I had enough. I had some really major things that kind of happened in my life, and I just kind of threw everything out and decided I need to figure out how to be consistent. And to be honest with you, there was, I was just sharing this morning, actually. It's funny because someone had asked me about kind of, well, what was the pivot? A lot of people are familiar who like look into me and look at my story, my background, they're familiar with the surfer story and how that was a pivotal moment. But really there's a backstory to that, because how did I even get there? Because the question is, well, Roger, when did you start to think about that you need to develop something for yourself versus when you actually started doing it? And it was before that, because I had collapsed. And I remember I fell down on my knees. I was like, okay, God, what do you want in my life? Because every time I've achieved any kind of success, they always seem to have some kind of burdensome issues. There was always trouble with it, the frustration, stress. And it's like, it just something wasn't, it was like, I felt like I was cursed. Like I couldn't have this like stable, nice, you know, just enjoy your success. No, you got to have drama with it. Why do you have to have drama with it? So I was like, look, I'll be a trash truck driver, or I'll pick up trash, or I'll work at McDonald's. I don't care. You tell me what you want. I'm sick and tired of pursuing my own goals. I literally just, it was a moment where I literally let go, let God, and just listen. Okay, I'm going to do your will, whatever that is. Because I was just exhausted, following my own dreams and hitting these frustrating things where never felt the sense of stability, security, and happiness. I would achieve success, but I was never really happy. And I think that's an important aspect. Is success isn't just making a bunch of money. You know, having money and making is great, but if you're always having stuff that's just drama, or you're working your butt off constantly just to maintain that, that's not real success. And so I think that grinding is an important thing to learn how to overcome as well, which is something I deal with. But so I had an interesting kind of an epiphany the following morning. And I'd recalled what got me started and what I had done 2 years after I'd figured out how to make it work for myself back in 1998 by that time. I remembered a scenario where I was with a guy that asked me to help him out. And I went down to help him trade. And I remember vividly, I said, okay, get ready. I think we're looking at Amgen. And so I said, okay. All right, buy now. And he's like, wait, buy. You sure? It's going down. I said, just buy. But it's going down. Just buy. So he started buying. So then it's like, oh my God, it's going up. I said, I know. Just take it easy. And so, and then he's like, I said, okay, now sell. But it's still going up. I said, just sell. And so he would sell. And then after he sold, it would start to go down. He's like, oh my God, that's amazing. It's starting to go down. I said, okay, great. Okay, now go back and buy again. He said, buy again, but it's still going down. I said, just buy. And it was just kind of this crazy back and forth for a half an hour. And then I think when we were done, it was like, wow. And he said, Roger, we just made like $25,000. You know, I was like, wow. So that morning when I was reflecting on this, I think this was like 2008, I realized what made that work. I was watching the CNBC talking heads talk about Amgen, and they were creating this artificial demand. And I was like, oh my God. I was able to do that because I was focused on, it never occurred to me. It's demand. And how did I just not take that deeper? You know, I didn't deep dive in that. So that's where I realized I need to start to look at demand and demand factors versus the price and the price of things, because price, it turns out, is a lagging indicator to demand. And if you can see where demand is at, it's kind of this, like, I like to use a rubber band analogy, right? If this is demand, I'm going to hold this side of the rubber band with my fist, and I'm going to have my open palm here. Okay. That's going to be price. Wherever demand goes, price wants to go up and catch up, right? Wherever demand is, price wants to catch up with demand, right? So as demand shifts, so does price. So the only reliable, leading, and objective indicator is demand, not price. And if you use an indicator, what are you looking at? A derivative of price.
Right.
So that's a lagging indicator on top of a lagging indicator. No wonder there's a hit and miss experience all the time. So I had to start to figure out, well, wait a second. And here's what's really interesting. You know, Brian, did you know that no market can correct or crash unless the environmental factors of demand have shifted enough to allow that to occur? Then all the market needs is a trigger to cause a very quick and swift shift to the downside. So for instance, if you focus on demand, you can see prices here, demand's going up and it's doing this and it's just, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, it goes up and price comes up and then demand shifts like this very rapidly. Mm-hmm. Well, demand always moves first and price being a lagging indicator takes a little bit of time. And then all of a sudden it realizes I don't have any support here. And then when there's nothing near it in demand, that's when you see that big double-digit, fast, rapid decline, right? Now, what's interesting is, I might say, well, Roger, but okay, so, but if you like the terrorist attack or the Chipotle Mexican Grill when it had the E. coli breakout, you know, and people were dying, you can't predict that. So, you know, but the market crashed. Well, if you look at demand analysis, you'll see that demand had shifted down from 700 down to like 500 a few weeks before the E. coli breakout happened. So when that trigger occurred, there was nothing holding up that stock. So when people started to sell, it was just this big vacuum that just collapsed. So you saw this double-digit crash very quickly. Now, the next question is, well, wait a second. So is there a time where something like that can happen, but you won't see a crash? Well, here's what happens. If the demand factors were still up by the 700s, what you'd see is a single-digit give back, 4%, 5%, 6%, right? And by the time you hear it and you have a chance to react and you call your broker or you go on your computer and you get on and either, you know, get out of the position or whatever, you've lost 5%, 6%, 7% versus 14%, 18%, or 20%. You see the difference? And that's a major savings, right? So I think it's important to understand that the factors of the demand are the driving force to where price is going. So if we understand where demand is, we automatically know where price is going next. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, makes perfect sense. Well, so you mentioned demand factors, so or the factors that drive demand. So what are some of those factors besides the CMB squawk box?
That's right. So it turns out there's eight major factors of demand, and most of us have been conditioned to look at one or two. Primarily, those are fundamentals, right? Fundamental analysis, and that's, you've got your traditional Graham, Dodd, Warren Buffett forces and all that stuff. But then you've got technical analysis, and each of those have their own subsets, by the way, right? So a subset of technical analysis would be Fibonacci or GAN or Elliott wave, right? And focus on any one of those, and you're going to have a hit or miss experience. You might have a period of success because something's seasonally and conditionally favorable to a strategy you could develop. But, think about you and I as people. Are you the same person today as you were 5 years ago? No, right? We're always evolving. Well, that's the market. The market's always evolving. It's never really the same. Okay. There are similarities, but it's never really the same. So, whatever conditions you create a strategy for that's working today and you're back testing it, that works great. It's wonderful. But when the conditions evolve into a new phase that hasn't happened before, now you're going to start to experience an inconsistency, right, of your performance. So, it's only natural. So, the only way to get out of that back and forth is to stop looking at the one or two factors and stop looking at price, which is a lagging indicator, or a derivative of price, which is the indicators, but instead start looking at the demand that is creating the environment that drives price action up or down, choppy, doesn't matter. Once you understand that, then you have a handle, you'll have a level of clarity and control about this, about the market forces. And so you've got the other, so we talked about two. The other six, you've got geopolitical forces. You've got subsets in that. You have volatility phase shifts. As volatility shifts into different phases, you've got market sentiment. You have liquidity levels, which includes volume, order flow, trade flow. You have what I call prime liquidity pools. These are areas where the market, when people say, "Well, but the market's rigged," isn't the market manipulated? People have the feeling of being stop hunted. People have the get the get this notion that someone's out to get them personally. Well, that's just because they're operating within zones that they don't realize is a prime pool of liquidity that other people, it's an obvious thing that and brokers and market makers and insiders understand this, right? They know that there are levels where they tend to attract people. And so those prime liquidity pools are this area where there could be multiple zones of, let's say, support. And so you think you've got this support based on this previous swing in price or whatever recently that should be solid, okay? But not understanding that that's an actual prime liquidity pool, there's actually a buffer here, what I call squishiness, where you need to be on the other side of that, not just the support that you're eyeing, but actually there's a, you have to be able to identify that prime pool and go on the other side of that. Then the experience of being whipsawed or stop hunted magically goes away. You're never a victim anymore, So that's one of the factors I had to take into account. Because if you know the market's being manipulated, isn't it important for us to take that into account so we can avoid being victimized by that, right? So that's another aspect. And I think lastly, you've got the imbalances in supply and demand. That's a force, and we use that. So when you put that together, I was able to at one point I had dozens of these things giving me these indications of all these different factors, but I was able to run into just kind of like fortuitously, I was just like kind of noticing, oh my God, that this is when this happens, there's a correlation between this and this. And I started, one thing led to another. I began to actually combine all the different indications of demand into a single indicator. Originally, it was a, I used to use a freely available indicator on the chart that was actually, I was able to correlate all those things and take into account and kind of set up a setting where I could see the demand factors in the simple little visual tool with about a 10 to 20% margin of error. So I was totally willing to live with an 80, 80, 90% accuracy, whereas before, 60% win rate is nice, or 70%, but that's, you're dealing with 30%, 40% of the time when you're wrong, and that's difficult on your emotions and psychology, no matter how disciplined you are. So I was able to do that, And so once I accomplished that, I was able to actually see demand in real time, but that wasn't enough. A lot of people think it's the magic is in this indication that's telling you demand. No, that's not enough because you have to understand how it relates to price. So I had to learn how to develop a process. How do I actually understand and interpret what this means in relation to price here? What about when it's on this time frame? What about when it's over here? And what about when these things happen? So there's different things that I had to develop a process around that helped me give it its value and be able to interpret what it's telling me so that I could use it and have consistency. And since then, here's something crazy, Brian. When I developed this in 2010, since then, I've never had to modify, tweak, fix, or update it. Not once. It's been the same. It's been working consistently without any degradation with all the crazy markets that we've seen, regardless of what market you're using or what time frame you're using it on.
Very cool.
And that's just it is mind. It's like a, are you serious? Like it sounds like it's too good to be true until you kind of delve into it and you deep dive and you're like, oh, that makes so much sense, right? But it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you mentioned one of your C's. I've heard you talk about the four C's before. So care to run us through that? One of them you mentioned just now was consistency.
Clarity. Yeah, and consistency. Yeah. So the four C's. So what happens is when you're trading, unless you've got, think of a chair, you know, you got four legs to a chair, four legs to a table. That's kind of one of the most solid ways to be able to have this thing that you can use, right? So we think of what are the four pillars that we need for us to not only succeed, but critically important to sustain and maintain our success long term. So the first thing you have to have is clarity. And that clarity can't be subjective. There can't be 10 people looking at something going, yeah, I'm interpreting it that way. It looks like this to me. No, that looks like that to me. No, all of us have to be able to look at it just like if we all got into an RV and 10 of us are looking at the gas tank and we know we have a 250-mile road trip ahead of us. We'll look at the gas tank, it says quarter tank of gas. All of us know instantly that a quarter tank of gas is not going to give us 250 miles. We're going to have to stop and refuel. That objectivity takes away the fear, the uncertainty, the second guessing, right? The anxiety, the stress of driving and I don't know when we're gonna have to stop and refuel. I'm not sure what's gonna, you know, how far this is gonna go. No, that's crazy. You and I would never do that. We would see the gas tank and know exactly what we need to do, right? That objectivity, that clarity gives you a peaceful mind that you can now enjoy what you're doing. So clarity is the first and foremost of the C's. The second is control. When I have objective clarity, I now have control over two things. I have control over my performance outcomes, but more importantly, I have control over my experience along the way. Because when I have clarity on what environment am I looking at, where's demand at now, and where's price, I can tell, for instance, if, okay, demand has shifted here and price is lagging behind. But look, if I let go, that wasn't anything that interesting. You know, that's not exciting. And the other thing is if demand's here, price can continue to move away from demand, and as demand continues to move away and create a more significant imbalance. This is what where drawdowns are created, where people kind of go, oh, it's going further behind me. And so what I've learned is I had to develop a methodology that helped me also understand and determine, do I have a high quality, high probability opportunity with a very low risk of it going backwards? And so what does that require? It requires a significant imbalance where there's just really not much room and statistically no real place for the price to go any further away to lag behind demand. It's going to have to snap back and catch up. Now I've created an 80, 90% level of accuracy in my engagement that I can choose. Because if I see this, and I know that it's not this, that tells me I have about a 60, that's a pretty good 60-70% chance of you know being profitable, but there's a 30-40% chance I might struggle and you know sit in, under stress. So no, I don't want this aggressive 60-70%. I'd rather have this 80-90% over here. And so this shift in our attitude of looking for quality, not quantity, means I'm going to be active a lot less, right? So less truly is more in this case, and you'd be surprised. When people actually start to filter out, instead of looking for opportunities to make money, they're looking for opportunities not to lose money. They find themselves easily outperforming the market by significant margin with less work, less stress with unbelievable consistency that they never believed was even possible. And because they're not stressed, guess what happens? You can actually continue to apply that process without any degradation or deterioration in your application of the process because you're not stressed or pressured, right? Like if you and I drive a car under pressure, pressure makes do bizarre things. If you know you're running late to an important appointment and the guy on the other side doesn't have a phone on him, you can't call him, you're going to drive your car a bit more aggressively. That's going to increase your risk for a ticket, an accident, possibly a life-altering event. So when we're under pressure, now we know the rules of the road, we know how to drive the car, that's not going to keep us safe from a ticket, an accident, right? So in the markets, it's critically important never to be under pressure, right? So we want to create that environment. So now when you have a method to see those things clearly and understand what you're looking at, now you can say, oh, yeah, that's an opportunity and I can forecast where that's going, but what I might have to sit through and what it might do, that's going to stress me out. So no thanks, I'll wait and I'll pass. Having the wisdom of passing on something that you can determine objectively would be aggressive, you know, but you've got the data, right? It's not hard to be patient when you know what to expect. If I say, hey, Brian, I'm running late to our appointment. I'm about 15 minutes behind. It's not hard for you to be patient because you kind of know what to expect. But if 4 o'clock, you know, you and I are meeting at 4 o'clock and it's 4:02 and 4:05. Now you're starting to get antsy, 4:07. What's going on? 4:10, you know, now you're becoming impatient and you're trying to get a hold of me. And for some reason, oh, my cell phone died. Okay. So you can't get a hold of me. Well, this guy flaking. Is that why he's not answering his phone? Is he not good? You know? And then, so you get up and leave at 4:15 and then I show up at 4:17. We just missed each other. Right. Cause you got impatient. But if I could tell you 4:15, and by the time I parked and I got in at set 4:17, you probably would have given me an extra few minutes at buffer. So that people say, well, oh, it's me. You know, I just have a hard time sticking to rules or being patient or the trait psychology. All that stuff is difficult, even if you were able to do it, because you're always living in uncertainty. But when you have a level of certainty, you don't need trait psychology. You don't have to. It's not a problem if you're not necessarily a patient person. You can work on that, right? So this is the thing that I love, kind of shifting the perspective for people and helping you understand clarity and control. It's important that you can control your experience along the way to performing, to generating performance, so that you can enjoy what you're making and have what I call peaceful profits. That's going to help you sustain, hey, doing this correctly all the time and not veering off and being tempted to do this or do that. Yeah. So that's the second C. The third C is by having clarity, having control, that now that breeds consistency. And when you're consistent, it automatically breeds confidence. If you're not confident doing what you're doing, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to make poor decisions because you're not confident. But when you have confidence born on the wings of consistency, so clarity, control, consistency, and confidence are the four C's. If you don't have those, you should not be trading real money at all. In fact, one of the things you say in Break the Cycle, your PDF, which I loved reading, and you give some really great insights there, is stop doing what isn't working. Right? I mean, why keep doing something? Okay, you try something, it works, and you do it the way you're supposed to do it, and then it stops working. Then you go find something else, or you get sold version 2.0, you know? And it, same thing, it stops working or works inconsistently. And you're constantly, so maybe it's time to stop and look, hey, anything that's focused on price and the price of things, that's going to inherently keep me behind the ball, right? Because it's an inherent flaw. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, part of the reason I was grinning when you were talking about trading psychology, and how, you know, there's like different perspectives on it. I've actually gotten into arguments with the guys who've written trading psychology books. Yeah. Because they're sitting there saying, oh no, you know, traders are struggling because they've got these, you know, these deep seated issues, you know, maybe, you know, Jungian or Freudian issues. And it's like, no, they're trying to do a job they're not prepared for, or, you know, they haven't gotten the training that they need, or what they're working with is just isn't solid. Yeah. But it's from a place of not being solid is the problem.
Correct.
Not that they have, you know, mental issues and they're psychotic. It's like, no, they're just missing something that's like kind of a foundation to, you know, just being able to trade successfully. So correct. It's more a practical matter than a psychological one.
I think you nailed it. You nailed it. That's, you're right on there. I think, and it clear, if something is not solid, that's the issue. And so you have to admit, I'm not dealing with anything that's reliably dependable, that's solid, that's consistent. Like, I've been doing this for 12 years, and to be honest with you, I had no idea what I had developed until years passed. I look back, I'm like, I can't believe. And I had to actually understand, like, through people asking me questions and me having to just explain things, I learned how to communicate and describe what I'm doing and realize this is really what I've been doing. And I did, you know, because I thought I was just doing more accurate analysis, and I had not realized the depth and the value of just the level of just what I was doing, how I was operating, until people were replicating my results consistently, whether they had no experience or they were 30-year professionals, you know, coming to me from within the industry. Somehow they found out about me, and it just blew my mind. So yeah, I think it's important to be able to have that bedrock of consistency.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, and your four C's, yeah, you're right on the money with all those. Now, so what you've been talking about so far is your market vulnerability analysis.
Yes.
Right. But later on, you wound up developing what's called demand imbalance arbitrage. So how are those different?
So market vulnerability analysis is this ability to see where the market's vulnerable to going based on doing real-time demand analysis.
Okay.
Demand imbalance arbitrage is a strategy that I developed to basically take advantage when we see these clear, significant imbalances. How do we confirm and validate that through the vulnerabilities that we see in the market to understand, yeah, there's just not much more room where the market can do anything beyond come back up and catch up to demand, right? The vulnerability is really in favor of catch up to demand now. And so there's an efficiency there with time. So you can actually look at something and go, I can assess that worth where I'm at in the next 10, 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, I'm going to be able to achieve my objective, right? If you're looking on an intraday focus, if you have a multi-day focus or a multi-week focus, you'll be able to kind of objectively kind of see what it's going to take. And you can apply it based on your particular needs. Like, this is not something that you have to fit your life into, but it actually fits in your life because it's very, when you're doing real-time demand analysis, you can, you know, now with the market open nearly 24 hours, right? 5 days a week, you can do it early in the morning, late at night. You could trade any instrument, an index, stock, right? A commodity, crypto, Forex, it doesn't matter, an ETF. Right. You can do whatever you want, but what's important is that you're acquiring the skill of doing market vulnerability analysis. And once you do that, then you learn how to identify these very high probability, low risk opportunities where we're arbitraging the difference. We're capturing the profit, the difference between where demand is and where price is. Because when price is so far away and the actual demand is really, it's giving you an opportunity to profit between those two when price catches up. What you want to do is you're looking for answering three questions. I understand the environment I'm in right now. Okay. Where's price going to minimally from here at minimum? Now I can go further, but we want to know where's it going to go at minimum? Okay. Now, based on what I can answer based on my vulnerability, I want to see, all right, what can it do along the way? And if it looks like it can do things that can stress me out, that's a low quality environment. That's going to be an aggressive interaction. I'm going to avoid that. But if it looks like, nah, I got a pretty clear move to this next minimum area here. And then I have to ask the third question, where shouldn't it go before first hitting this minimum area I'm forecasting? And so now I've got, okay, this minimum target and where it shouldn't go along the way. Now I know where a stop loss has to be placed. And I would never encourage someone not to have a stop loss, because that just says you're admitting you don't know what's going to happen and you're willing to hold on a large drawdown, and that's stressful and paralyzes your capital, very wasteful. And you could spend weeks and months. Poor guys who got stuck in the Nikkei Japanese index, 30 years it went down and it took 30 years for it to recover. So that's not, and we're kind of probably going to experience it like that here in the United States. We've been spoiled, but so always have a stop loss. And I never allow someone in my client base to put more than 2% risk or less, but 2% is the maximum. So you don't have that stress. Okay. So here's your stop loss. Here's your target. Now you want to see, based on where price is at, do you have at least a 1-to-1 or better reward for the risk you're taking, right? So if you get a risk 2%, you better be able to make at least 2% or more. You know, if you can make 3%, 4%, that's even better. But I don't want you making less than 2% if you're risking 2%, right? If you're risking 1%, you shouldn't make less than 1%. You have to make at least 1-for-1 or better, right? So if you can say yes to all that stuff, and you've got this significant imbalance, okay, then demand imbalance arbitrage is just that. We want to arbitrage or take advantage and profit from the difference where price is to where the demand actually is. So once it catches up, we know that we can close that out with an 80, 90% level of accuracy. So we have a win rate. That means if, and a true win rate, by the way, because you're not holding drawdowns, right? There's no large drawdowns. There's no big risk. And so it's a real win rate. But, and that, by the way, what can happen? What if demand starts to move away from your minimum target and it starts going further away? Well, then instead of a 1-to-1, you're going to get a 2-to-1 or a 3-to-1 or a 4-to-1 or a 5-to-1, right? You're going to make more because you can forecast price because you can see demand is growing even more. So why would I just exit arbitrarily when I can see real-time demand evolving and growing? Therefore, it's increasing. Therefore, it's going to cause price to follow suit, right? So that also, and the reverse happens. Along the way to hitting my minimum target, if demand forces suddenly shift for some reason, dynamically because of something, I'll be able to see demand move first before price has a chance to trigger. And while I'm still in profit, I can predict that I'm going to have a losing trade before I lose. So I can exit with a profit before I watch this thing fail and turn into a loss. There's no second guessing. There's no doubting. There's no, what if it does this? What if it might recover? Because I'm going to see demand, what it's doing. And based on what demand's doing, it's an objective information that I can now make a reliable, dependable decision upon. Does that make sense? Does that answer the question?
Oh, yeah. Very cool. Yeah, I wanted to ask about it because you had them listed, you know, separately on your site and as far as clarifying the difference between the two. And yeah, that's very cool what you got going on there. With your site, you generally work with individual traders trading their own accounts, right?
Generally, it's been individuals. I do have some professionals that have come to me, and they usually come to me because they're a client who has a portfolio managed by them or is a client of theirs or something, says, you know, you've got my bigger fund for my retirement. You really need to look at this guy because I'm not comfortable with you trading this or managing this unless you know how to avoid a crash and holding on a down, you know. So I've got some professionals have come to me over the years. I've not really been out there like, you know, I'll do an interview like this. I'll be a guest speaker when I get invited. But yeah, most people kind of come to me because they find out about me. I'm not out knocking on people's doors. So most of it's been word of mouth and through stuff like this. And that's mostly individuals that are listening to these, you know, types of podcasts that they're trying to better themselves and kind of create a better lifestyle and whatnot. So yeah, it's mostly individuals.
Okay. Very cool. Now, as far as your market vulnerability analysis, and the 8 factors, it's actually really cool what you got going on. And yeah, it makes perfect sense. Now that's in your financial markets manifesto. You talk more about the market vulnerability analysis, right?
Correct.
So
yeah.
Depth into that. So, and that's free PDF at your site, right?
That's correct. And actually, to people kind of wonder, well, what's the difference between this or this and demand imbalance arbitrage? So market vulnerability analysis is the engine behind the success of demand imbalance arbitrage. So demand imbalance arbitrage, you could say, is really the strategy. And it's the one unique strategy where it doesn't need to have a version 2.0. It doesn't have to be updated because it's inherently tied and taking advantage of the principle-based approach, which is based on the odds and the all those demand factors, right? Market vulnerability is telling you where the market's vulnerable. You're doing the analysis there. And then the demand imbalance arbitrage is just, well, how do I take advantage of that and profit from that? Now, I have guys... I always ask everyone, just give me a full year of your, you know, just do what I'm telling you to do because I want you to get the results that I've proven. Once you've proven that and you've done that after a full year, if you want to put your own strategy on it, if you want to do something that you're interested in doing, you could do that because really it doesn't, you can use any strategy. If you have a favorite strategy, Brian, that you like, that no longer works, but man, you wish it still did because you love how it was, you know. You can now take that strategy, okay? And actually, here's a great example. Let's pretend you have a strategy that has now, the environment that you're in now, only produces about a 30% win rate. So out of every 100 qualified opportunities, so you get 100 signals. Right now, you would have to take all 100 signals to find out that only 30 are going to win and 70 are going to lose. They're going to stop out, right? You could take that same strategy right now And as and you put market vulnerability analysis on, so that that becomes your filter to help you know, okay, here's a signal, but the market, now this is a qualified signal based on your strategy that you would normally take, but market vulnerability analysis is telling you, this is vulnerable to actually trigger you, tease you, and then stop you out. Oh, so then right up front before you commit any capital, you can actually forecast at least 80 to 90% of the 70 losers you would otherwise take, and you can filter them out and not take them at all. So before you commit. So now imagine if you just eliminated, just for easy math, let's say you did 90%, 90% of 70 leaves you with 7 losers that you end up do taking, right? Now you've seen 100 trades that qualified, that gave you signal, but you end up only taking 70 instead of, I've seen 7 out of the 70. So now you have 30 winning trades plus 7 losing trades. So you've only traded a total of 37 times instead of a total of 100 times, but look what happened. You took a losing strategy and made it a winning strategy because 30 trades out of 37, that's like, I think, what, over 80% win rate, right? On a losing strategy. And that's powerful. This is why, and I think this is important for people to understand, because when you look at, well, how is it possible that for 12 years, this has not failed and this is not like changed or whatever? That's why, because you can't lose when you know how to forecast the losers by simply knowing what demand's going to do, that it's not really supporting your target that you're thinking you've got a signal on that you should trade. No, you stay out before you even commit to it. So you just avoid that altogether. So yeah, you're trading less, but you're not making money and giving it back. You're making money and keeping it. And right. Therefore it's compounding. At the end of 12 months, you look back and go, I can't believe I made this kind of return on my account, you know, and with less work, less stress, less anxiety, right? And that's really important. So that's the difference between the two. But yeah, the Financial Markets Manifesto goes into a lot of detail on that. And there's also, actually at the end of that, there's a kind of like a 5-day mini course primer on demand and balance arbitrage at the end of that they can go and see a bunch of videos, see all the examples of what it does, how it works. And there's proof elements, abundant proof elements and client test, you know, experiences and testimonials they can go through so they can understand all about this stuff. And that's also complimentary.
Wow, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent stuff you got going on, man. And different for sure. So
yeah. Yeah. It's fun. It's very gratifying. I'll tell you, I get pretty neat texts and voicemails from people that just, and it's just so fun. You know, you see grown men, grown women, you know, like little children in a toy store, you know, it's so fun. It's just, yeah, it's cool.
Sure. Yeah, indeed. Well, one question I got to ask, just because, yeah. This is the Consistent Profits podcast. I got to ask. So what do you see as probably the top obstacle that traders have to being able to, without necessarily, you know, taking advantage of what you got, but just in general, what do you see as the biggest obstacle to being able to achieve consistent profits?
The number one problem I tackle is when someone comes to the market because they need to make money.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, the market is not a place where you could come to if you need to make money. If you need to make money, there are great opportunities in real estate that where you have a lot more control, a lot less, you know, stress, anxiety. You know, there isn't the uncertainties that we deal with. There is, but there isn't the way to the level and the degree that we deal with in the markets and the psychology so if you come to the market, you need to have two things. One, you need to have a very solid primary income that more than takes care of your needs and you're comfortable and if you never do anything else, you're okay. Second, you need to have enough capital to both invest in yourself and to be able to invest the market comfortably, and where you're coming to the market because you want to, as an enhancement to better your lifestyle and your outcomes, not because you need to. And a lot of my clients, what I tell them is when they come to me, and that's part of kind of why I interview them in the beginning, because I'll turn people away if I feel like they're coming in with the wrong attitude, wrong circumstance. And they're kind of freaked out by the fact that I'm not taking their money. I'm turning them away. It's like, no, because I'm going to do this responsibly. So, and you need to. So it's like, okay. So what we look for is what you want is trading to be a springboard. So call it a 3 to 4 or 5 year plan where you come in, you acquire the skill set and you begin to trade and then, but you don't need your profits. Yeah, you can pull it every now and then if you want to just taste it and kind of reward yourself, but you want to, you know, mainly keep it growing and have it compound so that it starts to really make a real dent. And as you do that, you maintain your primary income. Even when you've replaced your primary income with a part-time effort in trading, You want to maintain your primary income, whether it's through a business, a career, whatever, because you're going to start to see this exponential growth start to happen. Because as it grows, you start to get this, like, this critical mass starts to build. So what you want is to use that where the extra growth in the account that doesn't need to be there to maintain kind of a certain level of return, it's kind of going way beyond. You want to start to put that into high quality passive income investments that replace your full-time income again, so that you're not relying on your what you've generated as a full-time income through trading, but that you're working towards a full-time income that's passive. And then when you've accomplished that, now, if you want to quit your career, sell your business, walk away from that, that's the time to do it. Because what you've done is now when you come to the market, you'll always only come to the market because you still want to. You want to keep yourself busy. You want to have something to do. You want to keep your mind sharp. It's fun. Something extra that you want to do, but you never need it. And that is a critical factor. You never need it. And that's one of the philosophies that I have and what I try to really encourage and mentor my clients on.
Yeah. Good advice indeed. Yeah, as far as discouraging people, it's good that you do. I do the same thing. A lot of people I talk to, it's like, no, trading is not for you. You got a lot of other choices. You really should go look elsewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, very cool. Well, Roger, yeah, again, thanks for taking the time to do this today. Very cool. And very worthwhile. Like I said, what you got going is pretty slick and good perspective. So, and everybody that's here today, applaud you for, you know, taking time out of your day to, you know, learn and develop and, you know, grow as a trader, not just, you know, keep buying more indicators and strategies, but actually educate yourself and, again, you know, develop yourself. So kudos for you on that. And Roger, really, so if somebody wants to come find out more, swing by your site, which is marketforecastingacademy.com, correct?
So that's our corporate site, but I think if they want the manifesto and they want to be able to access the primer, a good place to go is Financial Markets IQ. Financial Markets IQ, the letter I and the letter Q at the end. So and it's markets is plural. So financialmarketsiq.com. Yeah. And they'll access the primer there and the manifesto. All that will be there for them.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah, I'll make sure that's in the show notes. Excellent. Very good.
Yeah.
Cool. Guys. Yeah.
Fun meeting with you. Thanks, Brian.
Yeah. Thanks for being here, man. It's been a very enjoyable conversation with you. Thanks for what you're doing, man, that you make this, you're sharing this with the world, not just keeping it to yourself. So.
Well, you know, I tell you I think that's another question people ask. And I think it's fair for your audience to know, you know, if this is so good and you're so good, what, you know, why are you sharing with everybody? Well, I never intended on sharing it. People started asking, how are you able to have this nice life, but you never seem to work when everyone else is working? What are you doing with your free time? And it started with a lady at church, actually, because she knew I taught Sunday school and she knew I like to teach. So she said, would you be willing to teach my son? And I said, sure. And I started doing that. And then other people started to ask, would you be willing to teach me? And teaching is a very rewarding thing. And then you also kind of realize, what are you going to do with all the free time? You can only do so much. So I found it a very productive and fruitful way that was very personally fulfilling and rewarding to fill up a lot of my free time. And that's really why I started teaching that. So I think that just out of respect to the audience, who I think sometimes in the back of their mind, okay, I hear this, but that's why. So I think it's important to disclose that.
Yeah, very cool.
Thank you.
Excellent. Well, Roger, again, thanks for being here. Everybody, thanks for attending. And again, you know, working on developing yourself. And if you enjoyed the podcast, make sure that you subscribe and, you know, of course, share it with your friends. We'll see you on the next episode of the Consistent Profits Podcast. Take care. Thank you for joining us today on the Consistent Profits Podcast, brought to you by Inside Out Trading. Make sure to swing by Inside Out Trading and pick up your copy of The Proven Formula for Consistent Monthly Profits. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to subscribe on your favorite channel, and we'll see you on the next episode. Cheers.